On November 13th, Local Roots NYC presented the panel discussion, Does Labeling Hurt the Local Food System? At the Rocka Chocolate Factory in Red Hook, Brooklyn. This panel is part of the series Race, Place, and Authenticity in the Brooklyn Food Scene, which is produced as a partnership of Heritage Radio Network, Local Roots NYC, and Rocka Chocolate.
Hey everyone, I'm Wenjay. I am the founding director of Local Roots NYC. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. Before we get started, I was hoping that as a food family together, we could all take a moment of silence to send our thoughts to the current events happening in Paris right now. So tonight we are here to talk about how labels affect our choices and buying, and also how it affects the local food system. So to start off with, if you guys don't know, I am from Local Roots. Local Roots NYC connects New Yorkers with their local farmers and small batch producers, mostly through a network of 19 CSAs throughout the city. We also support about 12 local farms and over 25 small batch producers. We have a storefront now in the South Street Seaport. And we're currently taking orders for our winter season, and we have our holiday party and store launch party in December. You can come talk to us afterwards. I've had a hangout with us there. So this lecture is part two of a three-part series with ourselves, Heritage Radio Network, and Rocka Chocolate. It's called Race, Place, and Authenticity in the Brooklyn Food Scene. At Local Roots NYC, when we talk about food, we focus on telling firsthand experiences we have on the farms instead of relying on words such as organic as selling points or descriptors. Because we realize that when we talk to consumers about food, certain keywords like natural, organic, they kind of set off a green light in your mind, and they automatically categorize a farm, if they're organic or local, as being good instead of wanting to hear more about the farm. And we want to convey more about who the farmers are, what their actual guidelines are on the farm, and how they treat their employees, more than just a label that they stamp on their produce. So the organic food industry has seen a 3,400% increase in the past 24 years, making organic the fastest growing consumer food and lifestyle trend in modern history. But only 33% of the general population understands or even recognizes the USDA organic seal. So how did organic become so trendy? And if so many people don't have a solid understanding of what the term means, will this only be a trend or can it be seen as a movement? So does labeling help grow the local food movement, or does it create just buzzwords and become a trend? I'm really excited to have such a diverse group of panelists up here to discuss the topic. And to start off with, I will introduce all these amazing people. So Sandor Mark is a grad student focusing on the ways American culture relies on symbols and languages. He's also a consumer who has switched over from casual purchasing to mindful products that are more wholesome. We have Grace Tuttle, who's a professor at the New School on transdisciplinary design, which looks at design as a way to address pressing social issues using new ideas, tools, and methods. Erica Wides is a chef, writer, and media host of Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network, which is a cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating real food. She's also been in the food business for over 20 years and has helped develop menus for restaurants all throughout New York City. And Alice Varon is executive director of Certified Naturally Grown. CNG offers peer review certifications for farmers and beekeepers who use natural practices free of synthetic chemicals and GMOs to produce food for the local communities. So welcome, everyone. I would love to start the discussion out with Alice. If you can maybe tell us a little bit more about how labels, why labels are so important with organic produce and how it even became a thing in food.
Thank you, NJ. That's a pretty big question, how it became a thing in food. But I think it's a good one to start with because it does point to how labels can be helpful and the origins of, say, the organic program. The organic label that we have today is the result of many, many, many years of work by people who are deeply committed to ecological practices, organic practices in agriculture, and wanted to ensure that when farmers were claiming to be producing organic food, that it actually meant something, and that they had a word that could represent a set of practices that were consistent across the board. So many years passed, and today we have the National Organic Program, which is designed to serve a very wide range of producers and processors, and I would say it has a role to play in having a good food system that we can rely on to get good food. But I know there's a lot of folks who feel like it's not actually a good fit for their farm, and that's how my organization came about, is to provide an alternative certification program for farmers who are producing food for their local communities, fully committed to doing it without synthetic chemicals or GMOs, and wanting to have a way to get credit for those practices. And they didn't feel like the National Organic Program was a good fit for them, but they still wanted a way to signal that to their customers. So that's how Certified Naturally Grown was born. And today we have 750 farms around the country who participate in 48 states. And it's a label that has great recognition in some areas where it's used, and a little, less so in some areas like Brooklyn. We don't have any farms in Brooklyn, unfortunately, but that may change. But we do, I really like what Wenjie said about the importance of people understanding the story of where their food comes from and having a connection to their farmers. So I don't see that it's an either-or question. I feel like labels have a very helpful role to play, and that people should understand where their food comes from.
What was the world like before we even had the term organic? I mean, how are farms conveying that story to their consumers?
They were talking to their customers and often using that word organic. Mind you, I was just a kid back then, before the programs started to be formed, so I wasn't part of those conversations. But I do know that that the origins of the program was people were getting frustrated because the word organic started to have cachet. People were like, oh, I would like organic food. I want some. And farmers started to use it kind of loosely. And that's not fair to customers, and it's not fair to the farmers who are really fully committed to using organic practices and who really mean what they say, who really don't use synthetic chemicals, who don't use synthetic fertilizers to build fertility in their soil. And that's I think that's the role of having national standards that are very clearly articulated and defined in law, so that now if a farmer claims to be organic and they haven't gone through the certification process, they can be fined $10,000 a day, I believe it is, if they use the word and they're not certified. So there's accountability there, and that's to protect customers.
And actually what I love about your organization is that it is peer-to-peer, and that consumers like us can actually go on the farm and actually be the ones to provide that certification. So it allows consumers to be connected to what that label actually means.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any numbers of maybe how labeling has benefited the sales for farmers?
It really varies from one region to the next. I know that many of my farmers report that they can get a better price for their products when they have certification. I think what's more clearly demonstrated is that they can actually get access to certain farmers markets if they have CNG certification, because those markets require that they either be certified naturally grown or certified organic, because that's what customers want. And that's not always the case in every farmer's market, but in areas where there's a lot of farms and there's pretty particular customers, market managers have found it helpful to be able to require that of their customers, and farmers are really relieved that they have this option as a way to highlight their practices.
So you're talking about how a lot more farmers have labeling now in the markets, and all of you guys are coming from different backgrounds. within food. Have you guys also noticed an increase in certain labels when you guys are either shopping or, Erica, when, you know, you're talking with restaurants?
Like the explosion in, you know, organic products is incredible. You know, I mean, now, you know, Walmart is one of the biggest purveyors now of organic products, which is pretty amazing. My concern is that stores are being flooded with organic products, but they're still just shit. If Trader Joe's sells an organic Pop-Tart, it's still a Pop-Tart. You know, so if people are eating that, whether it's organic or not, it's still just a Pop-Tart. So that's sort of my concern with this, like, just incredibly huge wave of organic. I mean, it's amazing what we can buy. Like, I shop at Costco, and I buy organic produce at Costco, and I think that's incredible, and lots of great stuff there. But I also feel like it's one of those terms that's just being, you know, broadcasted everywhere onto everything. And I guess that's generally my big issue on my show. That's what I talk about a lot, you know, this concept of foodiness, which is like the sort of health halo kind of wolf in sheep's clothing kind of product. So that's sort of where I'm a little trepidatious about the whole thing. But nonetheless, I mean, I can go to Costco and buy giant bags of organic kale for $3, which then I feel guilty for buying because then I'm not supporting my local farmer. But, you know, it's like I'm always torn between being thrifty and being PC and, you know, like, which is why I never know what to do. I'm always confused.
I think the term gluten-free is another one that has sort of exploded on the scene. Well, yeah. And I think in many ways, I mean, good people have worked very, very hard to find this term organic and to define certain terms, but I think there are consumption patterns in American culture that rely on these labels to signify quality. And I think that's more of an issue of the way consumers are thinking and are deciding on what to buy. They are looking for guideposts, like gluten-free and like organic, to make decisions about what they're eating and what they're buying. And so one thing that the local food and the food industry in general and we have to think about is how do we change people's sort of consumption habits and how they relate to these terms.
And changing behavior is one of the things that your label does. So, you know, the provision of information either on the product or by an association can sort of help inform these decisions, although we are talking about decisions that are made awfully quickly, often without a lot of thought. So whether that thought needs to go into before you even go to the store, go to the market, what am I going to do, or whether that happens in the store, these are kind of the points. I think you were also saying in your original scenario about fatigue of the narrative. So the narrative around organic, that people immediately are like, I know this vocabulary, I know this spiel, okay, tell me, what don't I, you know, cut through that sort of, and that might be, you know, too bad actually, because you are trying to tell a more complicated story.
And Erica, your point about getting, you know, organic kale at Costco is a great point because now that organic is a very well marketed term, this also means that we can buy organic anywhere on a mass scale, which also means that prices can be a little lower for certain, you know, at Costco for that. So it's great, right? It makes it more accessible because it's a lower price point now, but then there's also less transparency. So that's a catch-22. Is that better because it's more accessible, or is...
Well, if the trade-off, you know, for anybody, your average consumer who doesn't understand transparency or sort of isn't aware, you know, if their trade-off is buying conventional or buying organic, I'm always glad they're going to buy the organic. At least they're supporting the policy, they're supporting the change, they're supporting that farmer or massive farm conglomerate, you know, who's doing it. So I think it's always the better choice. I worry about issues of transparency and, you know, like a company like Earthbound Organics, who are huge, and, you know, what are they actually doing on their farm? And we were talking about this a little bit before, because I was under the impression that the sort of standards for USDA organic were not as good as some of the other certifying bodies, but I was schooled on that, which is good, because I didn't know. You know, but like I was saying, you were saying, I think it's, you know, this like snap decisions when you're shopping. If someone sees that label or they see that little symbol, that's great. You know, they'll make that choice. Ultimately, I think if you make that choice, that's the better choice. But, you know, it always comes back to me, you know, are you buying real food or you're not buying real food? So I always use that Trader Joe's organic Pop-Tart because to me that's the perfect example of it. You know, it's great to see the symbol on there. It's great to know what you're getting, but it's made from organically grown, highly processed industrial wheat. You know, it's not made from some heirloom strain of wheat and fruit lovingly grown in a valley in California and hand-picked and processed and, you know, preserved. And it's all very, like, Brooklyn and Berkeley. So,
yeah. That's probably something out there.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Making artisanal Pop-Tarts as we speak for the Christmas season. And
that's actually a thing. They're called neg pies.
They're called hand pies, actually.
Oh, hand pies. That's right. There you go. Right. They'll be sold at the Brooklyn Flea, I'm sure, this winter.
They're actually sold at 61 Local. So another proof that food labels increase sales is that Tyson and Foster Farm have begun to limit the use of antibiotics in their chickens, and General Mills is starting to create all-natural products to tap into this market. But the problem with companies using terms like all-natural, and if you can't see what I'm doing on the radio, it's funny ears around that, is that all-natural does not have any guidelines by the FDA. Neither does the word local. There's no, local could mean 500 miles from here. It could also mean 150 miles. All natural could really mean anything. There's a certification called American Humane Certified. And the seal, if you can imagine it, is a blue sky with a blazing sun shining down on a red barn with the door open. This certification actually does not require that chickens even go outdoors. It doesn't even require that fresh air be let into the barn or that they enjoy sunlight. So, there's no regulation for these words. They're kind of just used whenever they want. So, I guess, Erica, if you want to talk about your experience in food, how have you seen examples of people being misled in this trend?
Yeah, well, you know, these are big businesses, and marketing is what it's all about. It's about moving product. And so whatever the consumer wants to see is going to be put on the package, you know. So if people are concerned about humane animal, whatever it's called, raising and slaughtering and all that, you know, that's what the industry is going to provide for them to make them feel good about it. You know, my concern, too, is like when the good companies get bought up by the bigger companies, like Niman Ranch was just bought, you know, by, who bought them? Tyson? Somebody bought Niman Ranch. You know, Niman Ranch was, where's Aaron? Aaron, you know, who bought Niman Ranch? Tyson, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the small companies who are doing it right are getting swallowed up by the bigger companies because the bigger companies want to get in on that action and in on that market. But then how can we trust what the bigger companies are going to be doing with those you know, with those smaller companies, once they scale them up to their, like, you know, global distribution network size that they have. But what you were saying about local, when you and I, we were talking on the phone this afternoon, and a couple of years ago, Hellman's had a mayonnaise ad where they, you know, had these, like, beautiful images of farms and, you know, happy little white kids running around. And they were saying, oh, and Hellman's is only made with, you know, fresh local eggs. Well, like, local to where? You know, if it's Hellman's and there's a factory somewhere in, you know, wherever, Ohio. Like, every egg is local to where it's been dropped out of that bird in that factory farm. That's local, you know? So if Hellman's is using local eggs, like, to where? What does that mean? So a lot of weird stuff going on.
Sandor, I think you have a really interesting perspective because you are someone who is a consumer who drastically change from, you know, whatever you were buying before to focusing on things like all natural. So when you made that transition, I mean, how did you pick the foods you were going to eat based on just the packaging, and what was that thought process?
I think the place where I first started was doing whole food nutrition, single ingredient kind of nutrition. A carrot is a carrot is a carrot. And I'm trying to avoid packaged foods as much as possible. And then when I moved back to New York, it was important to me to have a relationship with the people that or at least in one aspect of my buying, my grocery store buying, to have a relationship and know sort of where those things are coming from as much as possible. So when it comes to when I buy meat, I know I buy from a local butcher. A local butcher that, his name's Alex, and I trust Alex to at least find the products that are humanely butchered, that come locally or as local as possible, and based on his recommendations on what are good to buy right now. And that's sort of how I transitioned, and that's what sort of guides my buying habits at the moment.
And I mean, how much of when we purchase things, are we doing it because we really want that product, or is it because, oh, I'm going to fall into like this circle of people if I buy this food, or this is, I just saw an advertisement for hand pies and I want to buy them now because they're hand filled.
I think the common perception is people do really rely on the trend in fad based diets. And so they seek out those guideposts and those labels and those terms that will, at least in their minds, mean quality, which is why I think in many ways the term organic does necessarily need to be in place as a controlled term. At the same time, see, I go back and forth on the issue of organic versus local, because local, I think in this a case like local, the consumer is a better gauge for what is local. Are there apples being grown in Des Moines? Is that considered local? No. I'm a better gauge as to, Poquay, New York is where I'm going to get my apples. But that doesn't mean we don't need regulations for processing and handling food. That's very important. So just because local shouldn't be regulated doesn't mean terms like organic don't serve a function.
And I think it's important to point out here that we don't have to make that choice between local and organic, obviously. And this isn't just to be self-serving, but if you do have the opportunity to buy from a certified naturally grown farmer, you are getting food that's produced according to organic standards and that's local, because we only serve farmers that sell locally. We're for direct market farmers. So if you go to the farmer's market and you see that this farm is certified naturally grown, you've got the best of both worlds. You've got local and organic. But even if you don't see certified naturally grown, I encourage folks to talk to your farmers about how they're producing their foods, because there are folks who are very committed to ecological practices and just choose not to go through the USDA organic certification program. Maybe they're working towards it, maybe they're never going to do it, but it's important to just have that conversation. But also bear in mind that they're busy, they're there to sell vegetables, so you may not get all the details right there on the spot. And that's why farmers actually find it very helpful to have a certification program like ours, because it's a shortcut communication and it is a guidepost for customers to figure out, you know, to guide action and figure out who do I want to buy from. And it's a quick symbol that can eventually lead to a lot of really great conversations.
I'm actually one of our farmers is CNG certified. And we spoke to him at the last Meet Your Farmer event we had, and farmers love labeling because, I mean, for a million reasons, but farmers are humans, and as amazing as they are, they're also not scientists. They're not engineers, so labeling actually helps them know what's good, what's bad, how do I improve something. So Grace, we spoke about this earlier where, you know, you moved from New Orleans to New York, and we were talking about how you notice a different pattern of the way people purchase food in New York. Can you talk more about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, just on the autobiographical side, it's like, yeah, I had great food growing up. And I had great food here in New York. Actually, my high school did away with their cafeteria program and made it a lab for the French Culinary Institute. And if you're lucky enough to have something like that, you know, you really grow up eating lots of different things and being shared like world cuisine and all kinds of different things. So there are a lot of values that we convey in the food choices we make, and especially in front of our kids or when we're supplying food programs for kids. But the food labeling stuff that I've worked with the most has actually been in the South Bronx here. So it's had to do with, the proximity to fresh food, not necessarily meaning access. So it's kind of been about geography and also these sort of communication patterns. A lot of people feel excluded by the natural food movement, and that's quite unfortunate. I think it is definitely unintentional, and but we're seeing that change a lot too. So healthy food programs are going into our public schools more and more.
Yeah, there, I mean, there's like there's definitely sort of an elitist air, you know, that surrounds it. I mean, you know, look around you, look at the demographic of this room. You know, we're not exactly diverse. And I think that the First Lady has been really amazing in that. I mean, I think she's been one of the most important voices for food in this country, you know, in 100 years. She's been amazing, but absolutely, I mean, I think there's issues of access and all, just people feeling included in the conversation, and it's also just a financial issue for people. I mean, this often the stuff costs more, not always. And actually, because of a place where I teach, I order a lot of food through Fresh Direct now. And Fresh Direct has made a huge effort in incorporating CSAs into their options, but also occasionally now the organic produce is cheaper than the conventional on Fresh Direct because of their purchasing power or something like that. I can't remember where I was going at all with this. But, yeah, something like that. I don't know.
I mean, that's a great leading point. Where have you guys seen places making local or organic more accessible in either design or the way that they label things? How has it been to the benefit of the movement? It's not at all, I guess.
Well, I mean, in your basic supermarket now, you know, the selection is so much bigger. I mean, I remember as a kid in the 70s, just the produce section was, you know, it was just the size of this table, and it was like 7 or 8 items. They were all wrapped in plastic, you know. I mean, just the explosion in variety and accessibility to conventional produce is exponentially bigger than when I was a kid. But now, you know, your basic suburban supermarket has a huge organic selection now. You know, whether everybody can afford it or not is another issue, but there's so much more available.
Yeah, we were talking about the racetrack, the outer ring of the supermarket, where most people sort of do a workaround around supermarket design and say, okay, this is the area I can get my the healthiest, freshest food. But of course, companies are now aware of that and are changing their layout and changing where they're putting their promotional money. So it's not in the center aisles anymore, and we're more susceptible to it.
Just speaking a little bit to Wenjie's point from a different angle on the issue of accessibility or affordability of naturally grown food or organically grown food, I know there's no easy answers, but I from the perspective of talking to farmers, I know that a lot of my members really appreciate that they have a way to have a certification program that allows them to provide good food for their community that is grown without the synthetic inputs, for which they don't have to pay such a high fee for their certification, so they can get credit for it. They don't have to charge such a high premium for their products. For some of them, they do feel like it allows them to keep it more affordable.
And I mean, do you guys view buying organic as almost like a status symbol? I mean, you know, all the top restaurants in our farm to table, or they source locally when possible. How much are we buying that because it makes us feel trendy or it makes us feel like we're special?
I don't feel special when I buy organic food. I feel lucky that I can do that. Maybe that's just me, but it's weird. Like that strikes me as strange to think of it as a status symbol, because you don't wear your food; you eat it. But
I think that is a counter narrative that, you know, the way that gets infused into the sort of culture and how we think of things, and then there are some people that sort of latch on and can sort of embody that in real life. If you think about people who just sit and take pictures of their food when they're at restaurants, I think food can confer a kind of status symbol. But for the most part, I think there is kind of a counter narrative that says, oh, you're only eating organic because it's trendy or because you want to be seen to be a certain way or have a certain attitude, or you have adopted a certain philosophy that also means you think you're better than somebody else. I don't think, for the most part, that's true at all.
I was just going to add that another strategy is sort of not focusing so much on the grocery store or the produce, but just on cooking alone, like an increase in home ec classes, things that sort of show you what you do with food. Those are other ways of approaching this issue.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that home ec should be brought back in a huge way. Not just home ec, but life skills in general, I think, need to be taught to kids. I taught for many, many years in a major culinary school where these were kids coming right out of high school giving us $40,000 to turn them into professional cooks, and they were like clueless, had no, you know, chef, where's the lemon juice? You know, and I'd say, well, it's in the lemon, you know, like, that's where it is. So, yeah, home ec, basic cooking skills, basic life skills, how to do laundry, how to, you know, like, I was coaching this kid who's an actor yesterday because he's going to play a cook in a movie, and he wrote me a check. He's 21, and it was the first check he had ever written. It was really cute. He was like, what do I do? And I was like, just put 3 more zeros. You're good right there. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, cooking to me is – it's so interesting that we have to have this conversation where we're talking about a return to things like cooking or to, you know, like things that 50 or 75 years ago, it was just taken for granted. You had these basic skills. You knew how to navigate food. And also what I would really like to see is that we reach the tipping point where we're just talking about food because organic is the norm and we return back to how food was grown. And then, you know, maybe there's this small segment of the market that's conventionally chemically grown. And, you know, like I would really like to see that happen. Like, why is organic food anything other than just food, you know?
Here, here.
I read it on Facebook. I didn't actually make that up.
And I saw,
like,
it on Instagram.
I agree with that.
Well, on the point of Instagram, I think social media has been a huge, huge help to both organic and, you know, making food, particularly single ingredient food, look attractive is important. And having those images diffused throughout the internet, because that's how people sort of come in contact with the world these days, is through their phones and through their computers. Yeah, and very visually. And every single you guys have an Instagram that makes things, yeah, makes things
we
look...
We have an Instagram, you guys should follow us.
That takes very attractive photos of food, and that helps when people actually see that. And because that also changes the things you value in terms of what you're eating.
And I think along the lines of social media, how powerful it is that farmers are now, you know, our Amish farmer in Lancaster, Pennsylvania has a Twitter account, and I have no idea when he updates it, but he does it. And that's how important social media is with farmers also, because, you know, they can show a picture of what it actually looks like to harvest kale on their farm, which you might not never know what that looks like. And it actually does make you think, oh, wait, food is a lot harder than just purchasing it. Someone's actually growing it. So there is a very significant factor of media with transparency.
Yeah, well, it's great. I mean, it's, you know, putting a face behind the food, which is so important. I mean, that's what you deal with every day, is you want to actually know there are people behind what you're eating and what you're growing, you know. So even if you can't get to a farmer's market, if you can follow them on social media, you know,
right.
It's great.
And our farmers not only post pictures of themselves, but they post pictures of the pests on their crops. So that, and I think that's a really great, great tool, a good way to use social media. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, you know, before we got this beautiful broccoli to you, this is what we had to go through. And it's, I think people are interested in that. I mean, customers might be kind of grossed out by it, but I think it's important, too. And a lot of them really appreciate. They realize, wow, there's a lot of work to get this from that farm to the farmer's market to my kitchen. And people are sort of waking up to that. And that, I think, makes you realize that the higher prices you're paying at the farmer's market are really actually a fair deal for all the work that it takes to get it to your kitchen. So social media is really a powerful tool for our farmers, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as cynical as I generally sound, I actually think we're in, like, an incredible moment in food. Like, we are really, like, right there. Like, you know, we're in a golden age of TV and a golden age of food, you know. And I think, you know, the next 10 years are just going to be incredible. Like, we are really at that tipping point in terms of food. The awareness is at an all-time high. And we were speaking about the supermarket and the outside track. The middle part of the supermarkets are just dying. I mean, the food industry is freaking out because they can't sell any of their processed packaged shit anymore. So they're all, you know, scurrying around trying to figure out ways to, you know, recapture that market share. You know, whether that means they're, you know, they do things like whole grain Captain Crunch, which is just, like, blows my mind. But they're aware of, I mean, they know, and they're definitely flipping out because they don't know what to do. Yeah, so we're getting there.
And I'm going to be the pessimist here, or the skeptical one. If we can talk about, you're saying, whole grain Captain Crunch, this health halo, I would love if maybe, Grace, if you want to explain to everyone what that actually is and the phenomena behind that.
It's just a human shorthand. It's when you find out one good thing and then so you think the whole thing is good. So, yeah, exactly. They took the artificial coloring out of Trix, but, you know, it's a lot of sugar in there, you know? So, like you were, like, kind of, we started off the conversation talking about some of this, you know, really, like, how do you know if it's good, like, fundamentally good? And by fundamental, you mean, like, it's nutritional, it's fair to the farmer. You know, you can really start developing quite, like, a long checklist for that. And these sort of little tweaks are more branding-oriented because they are responding to this fear and this loss of market share.
There was a blind taste test done between organic cookies and yogurt and ones that were labeled as regular or conventional, and people actually thought that the organic cookies, which they're all the same cookie, they actually tasted better, and they tasted more nutritious. I don't know how something tastes more nutritious, but something that happens in your body. But it is also proof that, you know, it's a very psychological thing. It changes the way you view how much money you should spend on something and how much you should, like, what it should taste like.
People also eat more of a product if they think if it's organic. If you give them the two options, they'll eat more of that one. And so if you're giving them, you know, organic whole grain Captain Crunch, they're going to eat three bowls instead of one bowl because they think they're doing themselves a favor. You know?
And have you seen in restaurants when they claim to be farm to table, do you think people are thinking, oh, the food tastes so much better and fresher because it says it's local farm to table?
I know a lot of restaurants claim to be farm to table when they might have bought food directly from a farmer once or twice. So it's, you gotta, I mean, there are some restaurants who are providing amazing food and really are buying from a lot of farms, and those are the most fun to go to. But yeah, I've tried to work with farm-to-table restaurants in certain cities, and they're hard to find the real thing. So, but yeah, I think the food is probably better if they are buying directly from a farm. That, in my experience, it's much better. It's going to be much more flavorful and fresher. Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's such a trendy buzzword now, and you know, when we were on the phone this afternoon, I was saying a farm-to-table restaurant as opposed to what kind of restaurant? A factory-to-table restaurant? You know, no restaurant would ever say, oh, we're a factory-to-table restaurant. You know, we're a manufacturing plant-to-table. Like, all food comes from farms in some form or
yeah,
another,
but most restaurants are getting the food directly from Sysco or something.
Right, I know, exactly. Yeah. But they could still say farm-to-table because, you know, they could say farm-to-Sysco to table, but you know they're still going to use it.
Why don't they do that? That's such a good idea.
Well, you know, Sysco has these new trucks driving around. Has anybody noticed this? And the sides are painted like blackboards, and it's like handwritten chalk, and it's all about like New York State local, brought to you by Sysco. Now, if you don't know, everybody know what Sysco is, yeah, right, like the biggest distributor of restaurant food in the country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, but they've totally gotten in on it, you know, and they're like all crunchy and earthy, artisanal now. Everyone's jumping on that.
So, I'm sorry, go on.
Well, then maybe this is an argument against what I was saying earlier about not regulating a term like local, because if a company can sort of get on and catch on and say, okay, if we just use the right buzzwords and slap on the right paint, then we'll be set. We're back in it. We're recovering. So I will rethink my initial position. How often does that happen on a panel?
Well, what's, you know, what you see on menus a lot now is where the restaurant will actually name the farm, you know, list the name of the farm on the menu. And I think that's great because that at least, you know, shows some integrity. You hope they're not lying and saying, oh, yeah, we got this from, you know, Jones Farm, but we really didn't. But at least that, you know that there's a relationship with the farmer and you hope that they're actually telling the truth.
Have you seen restaurants lie about the farm they're buying from?
I can't verify it, but I, in my past experience working in restaurants, I know that occasionally things would go out to the customer that were not what we were telling them that it was. Now, that was like 20 years ago. Things have changed. I don't know, but there's all kinds of crap going on in this industry, you know. Your profit margin in a restaurant is so narrow, and, you know, survival or failure can be, you know, down to a few dollars, and so if you have to do it to survive, you're going to do it to survive. You know, people have to make compromises all the time, unfortunately. Meyer Lemons, you're not getting Meyer Lemons, believe me, you know. It's very easy to fake. Pomegranate, you can fake that. There's like a lot of ways around it. If you want to know, we'll talk later.
Okay,
so advocate
then,
that.
So how do we actually, you know, as a consumer, we don't have time to every single product we purchase, talk to the producer, find out what's happening on the farm. I mean, I guess I do that a lot just running a CSA, but that's just my job, so it's different. So how can we actually use labeling to tell more of a story as opposed to just having a word smacked onto packaging? Grace, as a designer, I feel like that's probably something you think about a lot, of how to convey more information than just a word.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about dollars and eyeballs and all kinds of advertising things, like how many times is this seen and how many times do I come in contact? We were talking also about, you know, the toys that come in, giveaways, things, like just basically anything that makes you interact with the product for a longer period of time so that your eyes are on that product for a longer period of time. So whether that's putting, you know, we were talking about the map the puzzles on the back of cereal boxes, that cereal box is sitting out on your kitchen table 10 minutes longer than it would be. And it's almost just a osmosis thing where the longer it's out, the more attached you become. So it's interesting to think about how big those labels are, how much time a customer sees them. Do they understand it in, you know, sort of out of the corner of their eye? Does it draw them in? But it really is mostly about interacting with the product for longer that has them thinking about the product more.
How can we use that to support local farms?
Well, so, I mean, you probably... one of the things about local farms also is that all of the packaging that comes with a lot of our processed foods aren't there.
Right.
So in a way, you sort of have a closer tactile relationship with that food. And, of course, that's a really good part. Mm-hmm. You want people to be feeling the weight of an apple. You know, you want them to be figuring out its value.
Yeah.
So you can sort of do what the big guys have done, which is make games and comic books about your food. You know, sort of media making, you know, those.
Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, there's a lot of local illustrators out there in Brooklyn who I'm sure would be happy to help you out. But it is about creating stories or narratives that have people interacting with the food for longer or interacting with your branded food for longer.
And so you would have handouts at the farmers markets for customers at your farm stand?
Yeah, I mean, I think the handout model has definitely, like, seen all kinds of reincarnations. I mean, from a coupon, you know, to a punch card, you know, anything that has a tangible sort of thing that fits in your wallet. And between the farmers market, you pull out your thing and you think, oh, I will be there next week, won't I, to, like, put another sticker on this.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could partner on a little maze, you know, where you have to find your way to the end point and you find your way from New York City to your local farm. That's a kind of fun game. I'm already playing it in my head right now. Not even here.
You could put pictures of missing children, like on the apple peel or something like that.
It's a really small picture.
Yeah. There you go. Right. Yeah, fruit tattoos. Yeah.
Sander, do you have any other ideas of how... how we can pick our battles when we purchase food? And
I think specifically when you're making choices and when you're deciding what to buy, dividing up sort of sections of what you want to eat, meats, vegetables, dairy. And perhaps, you know, maybe you can't do in every single aspect of your diet local or organic, but perhaps choose one aspect of what you're buying. So meat for me, because I'm one of my hobbies is fitness, and so having good lean proteins and quality proteins is important. So that, since that's the most important part of my diet, that's the thing that I'm going to focus on.
You've just heard, Does Labeling Hurt the Local Food System? A panel presented by Local Roots NYC in partnership with Heritage Radio Network and Rocket Chocolate. Stay tuned for the final event coming up on December 11th at the Rocket Chocolate Factory in Red Hook, Brooklyn. For tickets and more information, visit heritageradionetwork.org/events. Thanks for listening.